by now, all of you have heard me 1,000 times talk about the Joint Declaration on Justification or the Augsburg Accord. It's one of the defining documents in the ongoing dialogue that's gone on for 50 years between the worldwide Lutheran community and the Roman Catholic community. And what this document called Declaration on the Way does is to summarize those things. It isn't essentially a new document. It's a summary of what's been going on, probably because all of us are used to reading cliff notes and shortened versions and executive summaries and those kinds of things. So it's a fun document. I've said this before. I don't have much new in my head. I read things now that are joint documents and find statements and go, the Lutherans must have had a hard time swallowing that. And then come to another one and go, ooh, the Romans must have really coughed about that one. But the fact is, it's a joint document issued under the rubric of both large bodies. This one is an American document. And that's more exciting because it says apparently they're paying more attention than seems usual, because it's still possible to say to Lutherans and Roman Catholics, how close are we to agreement? And it's like, agreement on what? And they've never heard of the Joint Declaration, and you know, they're still back pounding theses on the door. And I think it's just important to realize that's not where our church bodies are with each other anymore, and haven't been for quite some time. I love to point out that the first Holy Week that the Catholic element was a part of this community, Kevin and I thought we should do Holy Week and Easter together because our community isn't very large and we wouldn't, you know. And Kevin is really, really, really knowledgeable about things liturgical. And I am less so. But we met with our respective liturgical books to see if we could craft a common Holy Week set of services. And it had already been done. And that is not an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. Our liturgical books mirror each other in the structure of the service, in the very translation and language of the service. It was amazing. So liturgical folks, sometime after, our liturgical books were revised before the Second Vatican Council. So the first revision of Holy Week liturgy was in the late 50s. And that the Lutheran book of rubrics for Holy Week and ours are the same, it just says that there have been people who've been thinking about this for a long, long time. And one of the things about, I think, that's important about the Declaration on the Way is its emphasis on all of the ways we agree. But it makes a point that goes beyond Lutheran Roman Catholic agreement. And it's a point about agreement. And that is that we live in a world, and I only live in the United States, so I don't know what it's like, although I was with a friend of mine from England, and he opined that there's a lot of it going on in Britain. We live in a world in which we stake out a position and defend it to the death, and defend it as right and better than yours. Not as different from or unique, but as right and better than yours. And that one of the things that the whole 50 years of dialogue has done that is captured in the Declaration on the Way is that together Lutherans and Roman Catholics are creating a paradigm shift. They're talking collectively about respect and dialogue and openness and appreciation of difference. And that sets a tone for other segments of society that we could all benefit from. It's not my way or the highway. It's our way together to the Lord. And I think that's really important, that differences are enriching, not divisive. And that when we find areas of commonality, we rejoice. And then when we find areas that are, quote, different, we see them as unique and enriching. You know, the whole world, I've said this, I really always want to remake the world so that it all agrees with me, and then I know that would just be so boring I would die the next day. And so I think this document talks about the value of the diversity. And we've not been, people of my generation, we've not been raised to appreciate religious diversity. Now, I'm a part of the group, age-wise, that appreciates cultural diversity, and, you know, I've come to appreciate gender diversity, but it's still and religious diversity. This is a good thing. God created us different, and we find different paths to the Lord. It was a part of what I think Francis was trying to say when he said, we're all on this path to find God, but there's only one God that we're trying to find. And it's one of those things that at its face you go, well, yeah, we are monotheists, but nonetheless, it irks people. And I will also say that we've struggled in Christian theology, we've struggled for a long, long time about how those who do not know Jesus can be saved. And the Roman Catholic tradition had a concept which I thought was about as cheeky as any theological construct I ever heard. If you were raised in our tradition, you would remember that there were three kinds of baptism. Baptism of water, when you actually got poured, sprinkled, or immersed. Baptism of blood, when you gave your life to defend the truth of Jesus. Or, this is the zinger, baptism of desire. If you knew that you should be baptized, you would be. I think that goes beyond baptizing the relatives of people who were never Catholic, which is another religious custom. And as theology has opened itself to differentiation in the last 50 years, we came to appreciate the fact that God doesn't limit God's work by the limits of human beings. And so it's quite possible for God to work through all kinds of strategies to bring people to their ultimate destiny, which is the possession of the divine, which is love. And when you begin to move it out of the kind of specific pedestrian terms that we think about God in terms of, it begins to make sense. But it's a real challenge. And rightly so. It's a real challenge to people who've, you know, torn up their lives and pulled up their roots and gone to East Elbow Africa to preach Jesus to be told they didn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. I truly understand that. I also think that it's the challenge to those of us who don't live in East Elbow to say, then, what difference does being Christian make to me? And how are we together as Lutherans and Roman Catholics, expressing the beauty of Christianity and the reality of knowing Jesus Christ as enriching and enhancing our life. Anyway, the document, and Francis, I think, I can't remember, it's just in my notes, talks about a holy impatience.
Yes.
You know, for years I've been talking about church unity, and it gets very conservative people antsy. But the people in our church community, of our community of faith, basically go, uh-huh, yeah, and we're waiting for what? You know, and of course, the holy impatience has moved us to kind of bend a few rules and look the other way on a few things, so that in practice we can play out what this church unity would look like. But I have to tell you that I've come to appreciate what an essential role, and the document, I think, underscores this, what an essential role the people of God, the members of the church community, play in this. The theologians can agree, and the clergy can go, yes, yes, but if the people are still clinging to outmoded concepts and the stuff you learned from either the Luther Small Catechism or the Baltimore Catechism, then this unity isn't going to happen. We really have to kind of embrace this and work at it, which is why I think doing the study that we're doing for Lent is such a very valuable Lenten practice. You know, it's not enough just to pay lip service to this. We have to understand the ways, and by the way, it is, I think, 32 statements of agreement.
Yes.
That's kind of amazing.
Yes.
You know, with the Joint Declaration, it said, the anathemas we hurled at each other at the time of the Reformation no longer hold. And what we have now are two church cultures that have evolved. And then someone, and I think I sent it out to the Google group, someone sent me the marvelous article about Martin Luther was an invisible presence at the Second Vatican Council.
Yes, that was
Did
amazing.
I send? You know, thank you,
yeah.
Jerry. Good. Well, I get by with a lot of help from my friends. But, you know, I've been saying that for years. It took us until the Second Vatican Council to say, you know, maybe the liturgy ought to be in English so people know what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe the preaching ought to be based on Scripture so that people learn more about Scripture. And so some of the changes have occurred, but there's still a lot of difference. You know, really and truly, tomorrow is still, for me, one of the hallmark ways in which structurally we don't function the same. You know, how many of the Roman Catholics here ever went to a parish meeting in which you could question the pastor about something? No, it doesn't happen. I mean, and I've worked with and loved very liberal pastors, and it still didn't happen. But it's part of the way the church structure of the Lutheran Church functions. Because and now we've moved, we the Roman Catholic Party have moved so that we say, well, of course, the church is the people of God. You know, I've been saying for years, if you get confused about it, you have to realize where the church is. It's in the pews. It's not in the pulpit or the sanctuary. That's just a part of the church. So this is an essential, your ownership of the contents of this document is really essential, so that when we, and I think we will become an example as we move towards the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, I think we'll become an example of how, you know, one community of faith has had elements with different traditions. But that's not going to be it's not going to be really credible if you all don't own it as much as I do and as Kevin does and a half a dozen other people.
Yes.
So and it requires work and study. It requires setting aside all the old preconceptions. You know, Kevin said to me one time, I think we should stop making jokes about Jell-O. You know, every Lutheran in the world doesn't know how to make Jell-O.
Or care to, or like it.
Yes. So all those things. I actually have a book that Eleanor Friedman's daughter gave me, written from the Lutheran perspective, and it's "They Have Mary, We Have Jell-O."
Oh. That's funny.
And we've kind of gone beyond that. And but I think it gives us the opportunity to practice, to develop and practice this openness to other indifference with people we now know. You know, I have to tell you, because it's always fun for me, I forget on a fairly regular occasion who's formally a part of which community. You know, Gabe and Aaron were married here, and I'm pretty sure I could tell you, I think I know which one was raised Roman Catholic and which one was raised Lutheran, but I'll bet none of you know, or you could probably guess, but who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, it simply makes no difference. And we have to walk that fine line between understanding that it makes no difference at all, and yet appreciating it the way we appreciate our own family and our own cultural heritage. And that's, you know, I think that's what we're trying to learn to do here. How do we continue to be different, and how do we yet move ahead being one? And I think as we grow in our understanding of this document, it will help. We need to understand that we are more alike than we are different. And I think that's the big shift for us in terms of how we view one another. We are more alike than we are different.
Mm-hmm.
But we like the differences because they make the world interesting. So they point out that there are differences.
Yeah.
But they don't, you know, it's like...
They're not essential.
They're not innocent. You know, they're not inessentials. I am reminded that growing up where I did and when I did, my grandmother was Irish and my grandfather was German. They were, of course, both Roman Catholic. It was still a mixed marriage. and yet, they created one family.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you got stuffed cabbage and you got corned beef and cabbage. And so I think that's where we have to go with all of this, that the differences are enriching but not divisive.
Right.
Joe?
I think there are some differences, though, that we need to talk about.
Oh, yes.
And that's, you know, women in the church. That's
a big
difference.
Oh, yeah.
And until we can get to the point of even talking about it.
Well, we talk about it, but only guardedly. I don't know whether this is what's likely to happen, but you know, maybe you don't know, that every single rite of the Roman Catholic Church, and there are 38 rites. What we know, most of us know, is the Roman Catholic Church is the Latin or Western rite. It is the only rite without married clergy.
Yep.
It is the only rite without married clergy. I think we will probably, one of the potential ways to move this ahead inch by inch is that there is a rite in which women are ordained, and it will be the Lutheran rite. I don't know how best to phrase that, because that makes it sound, and it's not my intention, makes it sound like that, you know, we're absorbing the Lutheran Church, and that's not what I mean. But I think there's a way. You also know that there's a significant number of Roman Catholics who would ordain women tomorrow,
yes,
and a
yeah.
number of women who've been ordained. So
there is precedent.
There's precedent for that. There's Yeah, there's just precedent for that. I think it's being talked about, but not in terms of the differences, because the interesting thing, Joe, is if we are to come into full communion, then we are acknowledging the validity of ordained women.
Yeah, it's just
it's the back door. Well, let me say this. The Roman Church has to get its own sense of self together on those things, just as does the Lutheran tradition. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, when I saw Francis' statement the other day about Adam and Eve, thanks to you, I thought to myself, as I have thought for a long time, that in 50 years we may have in Christianity fundamentalists and interpretationists. I don't know what we would be called. And that
Christians?
The fundamentalists are Christians too, Marian.
I know, that was
but,
a joke.
But the,
bad joke.
Incidentalists.
Yeah, I don't know, Joe. But you know, every religious tradition, I think, I don't know anything about Eastern religions, but have the strict letter of the law observers
Orthodox.
And, you know, the Orthodox in the Jewish tradition. I mean, somebody was telling me recently, I work with a very, you can imagine, very, very, very liberal young Jewish woman. And she and her family went to Israel to visit relatives. And so we were chatting about what it was like, and I said, did you have a good time? Oh, yeah, I haven't seen my cousins in a while, blah, 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 blah. I said, you know, so what were the highlights and, you know, that kind of stuff? And she said, the hardest part was when we went to the synagogue, the women were on one side and the men were on the other. It is not just a church issue. It is a great example of what I said here, though. As the church and as our joint community struggles with it, we reflect then possibly the openness to the struggle that ought to be in society, instead of making declarations about roles based on gender. I watched something recently on, I wanted to remember the expression, but it was something about gender fluidity. And I thought to myself, it's going to be hard to have roles based on gender when you can't tell what gender the person is.
Right.
I say that as a positive thing. Maybe that's what it's going to take. If we're going to change attitudes, the way we change attitudes is to change ours first. And so as we move past the them and us with the Lutheran Roman Catholic discussion, I think we then experience what it is. You know, I love the whole Lenten thing is about conversion. It's that fundamental core change. And when we can make that, I think when, with God's help, we make that change around an issue or in an experience, we have that aha moment that says, it is possible. And then we proceed as optimists, because that's what we're called to be as Christians, we proceed knowing that it was possible. It is possible and it will be possible.